Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer, and this is episode number 217. Really appreciate you guys listening each week. Really appreciate those of you especially that share, like, follow the podcast. Just helps me help as many coaches as I possibly can, which is my mission and the reason why I do what I do. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Sornex for sponsoring this episode. The show really isn't possible without them, and I only partner with companies that I believe in that have the same mission, that have a deep desire to want to give back to the community, and Sornex is definitely one of those brands. This week, joined by Jim Grubpost. He's the assistant AD, director of Olympic sports for strength and conditioning at the University of Arizona. And man, I really appreciate you coming on the show, brother.
Hey, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for your time.
Jim, you've been, you know, Cal State Fullerton, Miami, UNC Greensboro, I think, right? UNC Charlotte. And then three different stints there at Arizona. And what I want to kind of get into, that's kind of unique. I mean, being a place three different times. You're from Arizona. But I'd like you to go into kind of what you've learned and how you grew as a coach in each one of those different stints.
Yeah. Good question. I would say, you know, first time in Arizona where I cut my teeth, really got into just learning the basics, how to push guys, basic lifting technique, and really kind of got into that, how a lot of us start off, worried about squat maxes and deadlift maxes and that kind of stuff and power production. Then I go to Charlotte, start working with some different teams. That's where I really kind of got into the basketball world, working with basketball. And then that kind of drew my attention and my focus on to doing some stuff individually with guys and girls and having some smaller groups and really looking and say, hey, well, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if this kid deadlifts or squats. If they're getting better, their vertical's going up, their body comp's going up, and they're healthy, that's what coach really cares about in this world, in this basketball world. Are they fit? Are they healthy? And how do they look?
Right.
Wasn't so numbers driven. Then I get the job at Fullerton, the head job there. I think what I learned there the most was just how to be efficient with my time, how to train. You know, I had eight teams I was responsible there individually. I had a very small part-time staff. And so that really taught me how to be responsible for 200 plus athletes by myself, really, with because my staff had their own teams. They were only 20 hours a week. So being efficient, how to get by with minimal equipment, how to get by with training 50 kids in a room where I couldn't even see everybody at the same time by myself. Then come back to Arizona, work with basketball here. And just had an opportunity to work with some really high-level guys. I think with that, what I really learned was what's it like to work with a lottery guy and all that stuff comes with that, with a guy that's a draft and all the outside influence and what his attitude and mindset is compared to your typical kind of blue-collar college athlete who's never going to move, you know, who knows that their career's over when they're done here.
Great.
And then at Miami, I think that's where I really got in and cut my teeth on a lot of the soft tissue modalities that I use, using those with guys, getting familiar with, hey, well, I know how to get somebody strong now and improve performance. Now I got somebody on the table and go, oh, shoot, man, well, this is why he can't squat right, or this is why he always has low back pain, and how to start to correct those things with my own hands and on the table and doing that kind of stuff. And coming back here then for the third time, I think this has been a lot more of managing a staff and really teaching young guys in the field and pouring into them. And at the same time, you're relearning some things that you might have forgotten over the years too.
Right.
And you a better coach and making you get back to some of your roots, but also how to develop good young coaches.
Yeah, I mean, I think that right there kind of takes you through the evolution of what I, you know, what I wrote about in my book, you know, CEO Strength Coach, about being a success. I think you got to be three things. You got to be a great technician, you know, in the early stages. That's what you did. Sets, reps, exercise, protocols, you know. But then you got to progress to being a great manager of time, people, and resources, you know. And then the third part is that entrepreneurial part where you're always searching and thinking of new ideas and ways to improve the program and even some of the other stuff, you know, and creating some additional revenue streams, things like that you've done that we'll get into. But I think that's so important, and it's kind of cool that you get to share that, and people that maybe have seen you go through that evolution, you know, that have been at Arizona get to see that evolution in all three stops coming back. I thought that was unique. You know, along the way there, you don't go through that process without making a lot of mistakes. You know, what's one of the biggest mistakes you made and kind of how you learned from it?
You know, I tell my interns, my young coach all the time, the biggest mistake I've made over the years was loading bad patterns, especially squat, deadlift, being too focused on numbers and getting somebody a little bit, pushing them over the edge when they don't really have, you know, maybe they have some external rotation in the feet or they got tight hips or they, whatever, don't have the core strength. And I just kept loading a bit up anyways. And I tell these young guys, the last thing you want to ever have to do is put your tail between your legs and walk up to the coach's office and say, hey, you know, our star player got hurt in the weight room today, you know. And so I just think to really look at movement patterns, look at how these guys move. I'm all about loading. Don't get me wrong. I'm not, you know, I'm not a guy that's, we're just doing whatever, dumbbell matrices all day. Like, we're loading. We bench squat clean. But if they can't do it right, I'm not doing it.
Right. Let's deep dive on that a little bit, because I think that's something important that a lot of young coaches face, especially when you take over a program for the first time where they're dealing with some coaches that maybe are numbers driven. You know, how would you go back and give yourself advice early on when you had that baseball coach, maybe you had that basketball coach, that football coach that was laying, hey, I want all my guys to clean 300. Bench 225 plus and on and on and on. How would you handle that situation now?
I think what I tell the coaches and what my experience is, hey, that first year you're with a coach, you better get done whatever they want to get done. Right. If it's running, if it's whatever it is, you better get that done. And you better get it done fast and safely. And then once you build that relationship with a coach, what I find, and you get done what they want, a lot of times that next year, then when you start to say, hey, coach, you know what? We're going to have a good number of guys that can't do this 300 because the technique's not there or whatever. And you build that relationship, that trust, and they go, yeah, man, that's your deal. You do what you need to do down there. Like, you're doing a good – and that some of that stuff starts to go away. So as long as the guys are getting better and hopefully, ideally, too, you got some guys that can play, you can win, and you build that relationship with them, a lot of times they'll give it more to you and let you dictate what the numbers are instead of them.
Yeah, I think that's so important because, I mean, so many times, you know, strength coaches, especially when they're young and they're full of piss and vinegar, that, you know, they want to take on this kind of antagonistic type of relationship of, this is my area, that's your area, let me do my area. And the reality is that we're an extension. We're an extension of the coaching staff, and we have to build that relationship first before you can affect change, you know. And sometimes that's many, many years. Sometimes that's a 1 year, like you're saying. But laying the groundwork first and understanding that, you know, as much as we are about performance, a lot of times we are as much about creating culture and an extension of the head coach and maintaining that culture through the entire year. I think you have to invest that time in early to be able to get the rewards later on. So I couldn't agree with you more. You're obviously you've had success in basketball and soccer and volleyball and all these other sports, but maybe the sport that you've had the most success has been baseball. I want to deep dive on that a little bit and just kind of dive into kind of how you handle baseball players there at Arizona, how young strength coaches that are maybe listening can deal with in their situations. Because, you know, my first job was, you know, an intern strength coach with the Kansas City Royals, you know, and so that's the minor leagues, you know, that's, you know, I was actually based in Kansas City, but
But I had guys from all the different affiliates come to train with me and do the different situation. And it's a hard road. You know, those guys are training pretty much kind of year round, you know. And so from a, just a general programming perspective, you know, there's not really, there's hard, you know, there's not really a true off season sometimes. You know, how do you set up your program? What are some just general programming kind of global considerations that coaches need to know?
Well, I think first off, these guys can lift and they want to lift. And really, I think a lot of coaches, especially newer coaches, want these guys. Stories I tell young strength coaches that I'm around is, hey, when we were in Omaha 2 years ago, I went into the crate and weight room with our team. And guess what? There was four other teams in there lifting that day. In Omaha, two of them played that day.
Right.
So guys can lift. So don't be afraid to squat and to do chin-ups in the deadlifts. Don't be afraid to lift them. Our program on a year-round basis, I mean, our that fall semester, that quote-unquote true off-season, you know, we're going to spend the first, you know, that's going to really focus on strength and power and size. Okay, we're going to spend the first quarter of that getting big, you know, the second quarter getting strong, and then the last, you know, half of that getting strong and powerful. Then they go home for winter break. I'm going to focus on size once again because that's going to be a time of 4 to 5 weeks. Well, they don't have to play baseball. Their arms aren't hanging all the time. They're not beat up from 2 hours of barehanded ground balls and that kind of stuff. And I need to get some size on them then. They're at home with their family getting fed. We got to get some size on them then because they're going to lose 7 to 15 pounds in season just by the nature of their deal. So I'm going to get size back on them. We come back. I usually have 2 or 3 weeks before we start practicing. It's all about power and all the different planes that we need for that sport. In season, we're still going to go at least twice a week in season. I got pitchers that go 4 days a week. I get a little bit more specific, individualized with my pitchers in season, depending on how they feel and the type of guy they are. And then in the summertime, once again, to me, I'm going to really change it up, give them some different stuff to do because they've been through a full year program. At the same time, a lot of them are playing in phony summer leagues with bad diets and not access to great facilities. So I keep it kind of basic in the sense of stuff they can do everywhere, but play with the sets and reps and let them do some different stuff.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with all that. I think, you know, these athletes, especially the college age athlete or even younger, you know, or just the first couple of years pro, I mean, they're resilient. Those guys, they can handle what you throw at them, no doubt about it. And they're going to rise or sink to the level in which you provide a stimulus. And so, you know, creating that culture in which they do train year round and their body's adapting and understanding that they're going to continually train throughout the year. That's how you can continue to train. You don't go through these pockets of going through fall ball and not doing any lifting or Cape Cod League or something like that where they're not doing anything. If they continually train, they can continue to do it throughout. And I think what you've done a good job of, you know, just watching some of the videos, some of the things that you've done there is creating this culture to where the guys, they want to be in the weight room because they feel invincible when they're going out there, you know, deep in the season, you know, because they are, you know, trained and continually going. So I think that those are the things that you're doing such a good job of that I think coaches that are listening need to continue to draw upon is that it's not a phase of out of the year. It's a continuous thing. You mentioned in their position specificity, and I think that's something that a lot of coaches deal with. You know, my pitcher's got to be trained differently. No overhead lifts, no barbell bench press. Maybe there's a difference for the catchers or you know, infield versus outfield or whatever. How do you break up, you know, your training per position? And is there kind of a meat and potatoes program and then some sprinklings of dessert in there? Or is it something where every program is individual to the position that they play?
So I get pretty specific because I have the facility and the staff to do that. You know, I got three other guys out there with me. So generally we have kind of a first-year position player, first pitcher program, then a second-year position, second-year pitcher program. I kind of just throw the catchers in there with the position guys. And then after that 2 years with our juniors and seniors, then they might even be on an even more individualized program if they know what they're doing, they put the work in. So I might have 6 to 8 programs going on when those guys come in as a group, and then obviously they have their individual stuff even more specific. But, I mean, I think at the end of the day, you know what, man, like I had pitchers last year. I had some pitchers that did very little pressing. But we still did chin-ups and all sorts of, you know, row and pull variations. And I had pitchers last year that did barbell bench, you know. Right. As long as they did the mobility stuff that they needed to do and the stretching and the flexibility, like, they were fine and they loved it. And then other guys are a little bit more sensitive with that stuff. But, I mean, in general, you know, we make sure we do more volume and pulling than pressing. You got to do a good job with taking care of their arm, and that's just, you know, the soft tissue stuff and the mobility stuff. I think if you do those things, you don't load up their traps all the time. You know, you keep them loose. I mean, they can go. They can train, man. And that's one of the things I like to pride myself on is, hey, we're not overdoing. We're not smart. We don't have, you know, knock on wood, all these Tommy Johns, all those issues. But we train, man. Like, my pitchers curl, and we do chin-ups. And you know what? That doesn't mean every day. And that doesn't mean we're smart about when their bullpens are and when their outings are and that kind of stuff. But if you do a good job, which takes time and staff of the mobility, stretching, and the progressions, you can do that stuff with them.
Right, right. You know, as much as you guys, you know, it's a long of a season as much as you travel, you know, what have you found? Give some tips and tricks along the way that you found to really kind of to, you know, from a nutrition recovery standpoint to getting training in on the road. Has there been anything that you've done that you think is maybe specific to what you guys do that would be a benefit to others?
I think you kind of touched on it a couple minutes ago. I think the number one thing is consistency. And I fight for that right off the bat with my coaches. Like, hey, listen, I get it. Like, we got to win. We got 5 games this week. This is a huge week for us. And it's early on, whatever, it's late. But, like, we got to be consistent, because when you start to get that 6-7 days now since we trained, that soreness after that next lift is going to be, you know, substantially more than if we just come in and just be consistent. So a lot of times, to me, I'll take coming in just for a 35-40 minute quick lift instead of taking if that's all I can get in a 5-day period, as opposed to taking a week off and then coming in and getting an hour. Like, so a lot of times, you know, I really try to build that culture. Hey, where guys have an off day, and I get that. Some of them need an off day, but a lot of them come in and they'll just hit a quick 30 minutes and keep that consistency throughout the year. And I think especially consistent with your core compound movements are, right? Like, you can't take a week or two off of squatting in the middle of the season, then come back and squat. Like, you probably missed that window of squatting for the rest of the year. You know, so stay consistent with your squatting, even if you have to lower the load. You know, I'm not saying go 50%, but, you know, be consistent. And then on the road, I would just say being proactive as far as finding places to train. You know, most of us out there are pretty good dudes. Most of us out there, hey, you are just considerate of that facility, considerate of that coach's schedule, and proactive, they will let you get in there and get a lift in. It might not be at the exact perfect time you want it, but most guys I find are willing to help you out.
Right. You know,
guys as well.
Yeah, I think that's something that, you know, it's just so, I mean, I've been on both sides of it. I've been in the situations where, you know, athletic departments or a head coach is like, you don't want anybody else in your facility. But the reality is that we're all in this together. There's a bigger picture there. And, you know, we should be fighting as strength coaches to try to get to where that's not, you know, if we lose a game because somebody used our weight room, then we got bigger problems, you know? I couldn't agree with you more on the travel thing. I think one thing that I would add to that we did quite a bit of was we created what we called flyaway kits that were, you know, little, you know, packs or cases of certain types of equipment, TRXs, kettlebells, bands, you know, that we were able to get at least a training session in on the field if we needed to. And it's maybe not the best, you know, but in terms of the best choice for resistance, but ultimately you can still, I mean, all of us can take somebody out on the field and then 25 minutes have them hating life, you know, with just a 5 pound plate. I mean, that's, you know, that's, you know, we can make that happen if we need to. So, no, I like all that. I want to flip gears a little bit. You know, there at Arizona now on your third stint, you've got the title of assistant athletic director. I had that title at South Florida as well. What do you think is the significance of that title is for strength coaches and why they should pursue that at the institutions that they're at?
A good question. I think the significance is as you go through your career, kind of like we talked about, you get to that point where now, like, the administration sees you in your area as a real significant part of where this department is going as a department. Where, you know, when we first started this thing, you know, for me, you know, 20 years ago almost, like, I thought that was really the goal. It's kind of like they knew people were working out down there and kind of people knew it was important, and it kind of is what it is. I mean, I heard an AD one time tell a strength coach that I get a monkey to do what you do. You know, so I think that's
basically what the Big 12 strength commissioner just got done saying, right? Did you hear that?
No, I didn't hear that.
No, it's basically what they just said about strength coaches.
Really?
Yeah.
So I think it gives the field some respect as a field to the department. I also think that, you know, it shows that you have an area, right? You have an area that really, at the end of the day, these kids spend more time in than anywhere else as far as year round. And as you progress, I think, you know, one of my goals was, hey, listen, I love training guys, and that probably will never die. But also too, like me in my career, I was like, you know, I actually like running a department too. I like helping young strength coaches. I like managing a staff, and, you know, I don't mind sitting in on some of these meetings as a department and say, hey, where are we going as a department and how can strength conditioning help, whether it's facilities, financially, you know, whatever, and helping team up with the training room and sports psychology and nutrition, and being able to really express what our field does for these athletes to the administrators. Because a lot of times if you don't have that title, you know, you don't have a lot of contact with the administration. They might not really even know or value really what you're doing as a department.
I agree with you 100%. I think, you know, professionalism as a whole, we got as a profession, we have to strive to be viewed in better terms than just being that meathead strength coach with coaching shorts on and a t-shirt, you know, and a whistle. We have to be the educated professionals that we are, and part of that is playing that game, you know, with the rest of the administration. But I often say it's one of the reasons why I titled my book CEO Strength Coaches. I think strength coaches are basically CEOs of small businesses. And if I was just on the street and I was running my own business and I had a group of about 12 employees, 15 employees, and I had a, you know, an annual budget of about $3 million, then I would be called a CEO, you know. But most strength coaches, that's what you do. You put them in the room. And, you know, when you went through the remodel at Arizona, you were in charge of about $1 million, you know. We have to have that kind of, our administrations have to have that amount of confidence in us. We have to carry ourselves with that amount of professionalism. And I think that you can always affect more change from within than being on the outside, always working through a mediator of some sort of assistant athletic director or associate athletic director, instead of being in that room kind of fighting and pleading your case. And ultimately, if we're all doing it for the right reasons, most of us do, we're fighting for the athletes in those meetings a lot of times, you know, and I know that you do that. You know, one of those things that you mentioned, you know, because of, you know, that entrepreneurial type, you know, and being smart and being in the business for as long as you've been in it, you know that you have to kind of prepare for those periods of transition, you know, those moments when you're in between jobs or whatever, and when you have family, and I think you got two kids, right?
Yeah.
You know, we got two kids at home, and you know, you got to be able to provide for them, you know. And so you've gone on, you've started jkfitness.com, where you've been doing some pretty cool things, putting out different tips. And what's been your motivations behind that?
Just like you said, I mean, to kind of have a plan B, you know, I mean, like we talked about with my career, I've moved all over the place. And even actually when I first came back here, I had a pretty sweet opportunity. And my wife's like, "Oh, if you're taking that, you're going by yourself. Like, I'm staying here," right, you know. And so I wanted to have a plan B. You know, just you just never know in this field, in college right. athletic level, that this Power Five type of level. And also, you know, I started to find some reward, some real reward in helping people other than athletes. You know, whether it was just people that were looking for general fitness or, you know, just getting moving again and they had some back problems, whatever. So, you know, a lot of times those people are really appreciative, which a lot of times, let's be honest, a lot of our athletes aren't appreciative. They see this as something they have to do. And a lot of times you got to be this motivator every day. And where these kids aren't intrinsically motivated, but and so that can kind of be a drag on you, you know, really. And so I was able to help some people, and I was like, man, you know, what does this look like big picture? How can I help more people? But also at the end of the day, none of us have the time, right? We're all working 12, 14-hour days. So
right.
into some of this online stuff to help people, to maximize my time, to maximize the number of people I can help, obviously for extra income and a plan B income as well.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic, and I think more coaches need to, you know, what usually happens is a coach gets to a situation where they don't have a plan B, they're forced to kind of, you know, all of a sudden they get let go from a position or something, and there is no plan, you know, there is no audience or nobody willing to buy a product or something that you create or a concept of what that business looks like in any capacity, and so. Having some things and kind of having a plan and doing it as you can in a passive way throughout and building that kind of tribe is smart. But I think also just understanding the volatility of the profession, you know, and knowing that, you know, at best it's probably a 10-year stint at one place. It's maybe a, you know, just a few years. And ultimately you have to have some a plan for those periods of transition. And lastly, I think the most important thing in that is if you don't put out that information, then who is? You know, yeah. It's these internet gurus, these fly-by-night trainers that get some weekend certification that don't have any kind of nearly the expertise or knowledge that you do. And, you know, they're putting out this stuff, and that's what people – that's the vision that people get of our field instead of the people that should be doing it, like yourself, that are putting great information out there to the masses. And so I applaud it. I think it's the right thing to do. I think more coaches need that. You know, don't take away from what you're doing. Try to find a way to build around it. But I think it's such an important step for coaches. We had the show here, Jim, with some resources. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Oh, the best piece of coaching advice. Man.
Or give me the a piece of coaching advice that you often tell your coaches.
You know, the biggest thing is like, hey, you got to know what you're doing. You got to have that. And I see this with the young guys, right? They have all the book knowledge, but can you coach? Like we are coaches, right? Like you can know anatomy, physiology, sets, reps, programming, but can you take 40 guys through a workout by yourself? And so how do you develop yourself as a coach? Vocally, presence, awareness. So I think a lot of us, you know, myself included, how do you work on becoming a better coach and work on that just as much as the knowledge base of it?
I agree 100%. What about a book, app, website recommendation?
You know what, man? I'm a huge Charles Poulkin guy. So I love Strength Sensei. And I love that, you know, a lot of the information he puts out there. I think app-wise, Bridge Athletic. That's the app we use here to develop to give all of our athletes their programs. It's a sweet app they have on their phone, even when they're not here with us. They have their programs in an app with videos and the sets and reps and all that stuff. Love them. They do a great job with us. Books. You know, I'm a big fan, I think, for a lot of us because we get bombarded with all the textbooks, all the programming, all the strength stuff. But I think if you're really starting to look at some soft tissue stuff, Stretch to Win by Ann and Chris Frederick, that's a great place for a lot of us to start and to really look at some different ways of stretching the fascia, the joint capsule, foam roll routines, and as opposed to just kind of your traditional feet together, hanging down, stretching, like to start branching out for some stretching mobility stuff.
Those are all great, great resources. Well, man, I really appreciate you taking the time and jumping on here. And it's obvious to me that, you know, you do things for the right reason and with your athletes, but also by your family and by the university. And it speaks volumes to the rest of the community. So I appreciate that, man.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.